it is.
From deep inside your radio.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, where it's a beautiful day. Actually, it is. This is not National Farm and Home Hour talk. This is a really beautiful day, although it's getting brisk, New Orleans style. First of all, thanks to everybody who participated as audience member or crew member alike at all of the Judith and Harry Christmas shows this year, but most especially last night here in New Orleans, yesterday and last night at the Contemporary Arts Center, which, by the way, coincidentally, is also one of the, I guess, about three dozen venues for something called Prospect One, which is this remarkably comprehensive and sprawling art biennial first, at least here. I don't know if they have them anywhere else in the United States. Not a market, a biennial art spray that's going on all over town through the middle of January. So if you ever want an excuse to come to New Orleans this time of year when it's warm or warmish and you don't particularly care for either beer or seeing, you know, you've seen enough mammary glands in your time, come for the art, stay for the food. More about that, I think, on another show. And this, of course, being, what, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, my birthday, the birthday of Philip Manuel, the great New Orleans singer who joined us at the Christmas shows last night. This will be sort of the traditional Le Show Christmas show, Xmas show, but with some new additions, of course, as always. First, though, the development of nuclear arsenals by both Iran and North Korea, both of which were made possible by our friend Pakistan, AQ Khan, still under house arrest, could that development could lead to a, quote, cascade of proliferation. Oh, that's a beautiful effect. Making it more probable that terrorists could get their hands on an atomic weapon. Who says that? A congressionally chartered commission. Yes, it's been punted over to a commission which reported this week. It appears we are a tipping point in proliferation. The panel was led by former Defense Secretary William Perry and former Defense Secretary James Schlesinger. It added that actions by Tehran and Pyongyang could lead other countries to follow, and as each nuclear power is added, the probability of a terror group getting a nuclear bomb increases. Thank you, AQ Khan, from our friend Pakistan, for making this possible, although they don't finger Pakistan. But, you know, that's what I'm here to do, is point fingers. In the report, the commission called for a global non-proliferation strategy. Never too late for that. Such a U.S. effort would require intense cooperation with other nations. Well, that's going to happen. No, maybe it will now. Especially other nuclear powers and cooperation with the IAEA. A target of criticism from the Bush administration because, of course, they were right. You don't want that. So, from the tipping point, hello, welcome to the show.
I don't want nothing for Christmas. I've got plenty of stuff. I haven't got room for the things I own. Made up my mind, enough's enough. I have over 3,000 records. My books alone would fill a moving van. So I don't want nothing for Christmas. I hope you'll understand. I don't want nothing for Christmas. I've got too many clothes. 25 sweaters and 30 ties. 40 shirts, don't need no more of those. I can't think of any good reason. I'd want more videos and DVDs. I don't want nothing for Christmas. Heed my wishes, please. Take the money you'd spend on a present for me and buy a beggar a meal, one he'll appreciate. Or you can stop by the house for a hug and a kiss. That would be great. Thank you. good tidings for Christmas. Nothing material, please. I'm more than happy with what I've got. I'm feeling good, my mind's at ease. We've all become too greedy. I don't care what our TVs say. Just spread your love to the needy. To have a great Christmas day. To have a great Christmas day.
Hi, this is Brett Michaels of Poison, wishing you a very Merry Christmas on behalf of Bobby, Ricky, Cece, and myself. Have a safe, wonderful Christmas.
Once a child and now a mother, Christmas came with all its glee. Tinsel topped and crystal covered, she knelt to dress the dancing tree. And gone were all her thoughts revealing, gone was all the drudgery, all the worries she'd been weaving as she knelt to dress the dancing tree. And she thought of the times when she was just a child, and she helped her mother dress the tree. She thought with a smile how her words seemed so wise when she said, you long for days like these. And through her dreams, her sentimenting, came the sounds of her sweet song, full of life so unrepenting. Down the stairs her family came. And she said, little soldier, when you're older, you will love a girl like me. And kiss her, hold her, remember I told you to dance around the dancing tree. Just a child, and you helped your mother dress the tree, and you sing with a smile how my words seem so wise and you'll cherish days like these. Once a child and now a mother, thankful for her family, her sleeping babe and sleeping lover, she dances round the dancing tree. She dances round the dancing tree.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the Xmas, the traditional Xmas edition of the show. And You know, I think it's unfair to project too many hopes or expectations on the incoming administration, given the unprecedentedly large pile of crap that's being dumped on their desk as they walk in. But I do think it's appropriate to voice this particular wish, which is that they desist. They resist the temptation to issue any more cute Christmas videos featuring their soon-to-be acquired dog. I think we've seen enough cute Christmas videos with the White House dog to last us all a very long time. Here's my particular highlight from this year's edition.
You better wake up, fella. There's a lot of work to do around here. We're sprinting to the finish, not napping to the finish.
That's President Bush talking not to himself, but to Barney. But on the other hand, who knows? You know, trick photography. So, you know, if anybody from the Obama administration is listening, no more cute dog videos at Christmas time. Please, it's the least you can do.
Christmas time is here, by golly, disapproval would be folly. Deck the halls with hunks of holly, fill a cup and don't say when. Kill the turkeys, ducks, and chickens. Mix the punch, drag out the dickens. Even though the prospect sickens, brother, here we go again. On Christmas Day, you can't get sore. Your fellow man you must adore. There's time to rob him all the more. The other 364. Relations, sparing no expense'll, send some useless old utensil or a matching pen and pencil, just the thing I need. How nice. It doesn't matter how sincere it is, nor how heartfelt the spirit. Sentiment will not endear it. What's important is the price. Bark the Herald Tribune sings, advertising wondrous things. God rest ye merry merchants, may ye make the Yuletide pay. Angels we have heard on high tell us to go out and buy. So let the raucous sleigh bells jingle, hail our dear old friend Kris Kringle, driving his reindeer across the sky. Don't stand underneath when they fly by.
Well, of course, it's time for tradition and traditional music at this time of year, but it's also time to take into account what's changed this year. What's different about this holiday season?
It's Christmas time for OJ. The bars make a merry clang. He got matching fruitcakes from Van Atter and from Lang. A furry pudding from Furman. Prison food's grim enough. And OJ sings a jolly refrain. The Goldman's got my stuff. The Goldman's got my stuff. Bing dong, bling bong. Tinsel on the Joshua tree. It's Christmas time for OJ, just like it ought to be. Oh, it's Christmas time for OJ. His cellmates made a pact. They'd make him sit on the football, and then they'd watch him act. The warden, he sent a candygram, smells like droppings from McGruff. And OJ sings himself to sleep. The Goldman's got my stuff. The Goldman's got my stuff. Rosa Lopez forgot to send a gift, but she did return a broom. Bob Shapiro gave a handmade gift, a free year of legal Zoom. Bruno Mali sent some ugly ass shoes, prison footwear's kinda rough. And Santa Claus sings in OJ's dreams, the Goldman's got your stuff. The Goldman's got your stuff. Bing, dong, bling, blong. A high desert cooler is home. It's Christmas time for OJ. Never no more to roam. No, never no more to roam.
Santa Claus, pull straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer, and go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find. The kids are gonna love you so. Leave a toy for Johnny. Leave a doll for Mary. Leave something fruity for Donnie. And don't forget about Gary. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Tell him James Brown sent you. Go straight to the ghetto. You know that I know what you will see, 'cause that was once me. Hit it, hit it. You'll see mothers and soul brothers. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, oh Lord, go straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find. The kids are gonna love you so. Fill every stocking you find. They know that they need you so. I'm begging you, Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. If anyone wanna know, tell him Hank Ballard told so. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Never thought I'd realize I'd be singing a song with water in my eyes. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Don't leave nothing for me. I've had my chance, you see. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, your soul brother needs you so. Santa Claus.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. First of all, what was the guy who threw the shoes? Not those Bruno Mali shoes, other shoes. What was he thinking? This from the Sunday Times of London. The young Iraqi journalist who hurled the shoes at President George W. Bush had been incensed by a story he covered about an American soldier who used a copy of the Quran for target practice. According to the journalist's family, Muntathar al-Zaidi, who became an overnight hero in the Arab world, worked as a reporter for the popular Al-Baghdadiya TV station. In May, he was sent to report on an incident in Radwaniya, west of Baghdad, in which an Islam's holy book was found riddled with bullets from an American sniper. He talked incessantly about the subject, recalled his elder brother, Uday. I guess it's a common name. It was one of a number of assignments that appear to have radicalized Zaidi during his brief journalistic career. He could face up to 15 years in jail. He's now being held in the heavily protected Green Zone. Well, at least that's heavily protected. We don't know about him. His family has not been allowed to see him because it's a free country. Uday said he'd received a call from a man identifying himself only as a bodyguard of Prime Minister Maliki. Maliki said the man was feeling guilty that Zaidi had been injured during the incident. That is to say, as the news conference carried on, journalists heard screams from a nearby room where Zaidi was allegedly being beaten. And, also about Iraq, from the Sunday Telegraph of London, General Sir Mike Jackson, not the boy child, the former chief of the General Staff of the United Kingdom Armed Forces, says now that the violence in post-war Iraq was, quote, much exacerbated by the security vacuum created by Washington's appalling decisions to disband the Iraqi security forces, unquote. General Sir Mike added that the U.S. policy to de-bathify Iraq doubled the time taken to reach the point where the coalition could consider a withdrawal from the country. Just doubled it. The general also added that Iranian this is interesting in terms of the Bush legacy project going on now with Cheney and Rice appearing on the Sunday Yak shows this week to say, no, it was all good. It was good. The general also added that Iranian backing for Shia militants, a development which led to hundreds of British casualties, further complicated the post-war environment. The former defense chief did say he believed the campaign had been successful, was also critical of the U.S. and British governments for failing to understand fully the complexity of the situation in Iraq and to create a proper reconstruction plan. That's a minor quibble. Just didn't understand the complexities. You know? As Paul Wolfowitz once memorably testified, under oath, Iraq has no history of ethnic conflict. More from outside the bubble. Maybe this has been reported in the United States. Maybe I just missed it, being busy as I was. The mother of Levi Johnston, the self-confessed redneck who was the father of Bristol Palin, remember her, daughter of Sarah Palin, father of Bristol Palin's child and is due to marry her next summer. The mother, Sherry Johnston, was taken into custody this week at her home in Wasilla, Alaska, charged with 6 counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance. This is your grandmother of the... Oh, I can't figure out these relationships. Officials in Alaska said, on drugs. The arrest was connected with the strong prescription painkiller OxyContin. Hello, Rush. Hey, that's good stuff. In addition to possession charges, Mrs. Johnston faces a felony charge usually related to selling or manufacturing said drugs. This is a total and complete fabrication. I can tell by the presence of the word OxyContin. The arrest followed an undercover narcotics investigation. Law enforcement officials refused to say whether it was underway when Sarah Palin burst onto the national political scene. Could have been happening all along. Bristol is the one who was revealed to be pregnant during the Republican convention. Timing. Palin, of course, is trying to rebuild her national political identity. It's by no means certain, opines the Telegraph, that the arrest will harm her politically. Given that Palin's popularity with the base of the Republican Party was due in part to what voters saw as their authenticity. Yeah, that's authentic. Having the future grandmother of your future grandchild, whatever, busted for OxyContin. That makes her more authentic. Don't you understand that? Also from the Telegraph, the British Wind Energy Association has agreed to scale down its calculation for the amount of harmful carbon dioxide emissions that can be eliminated by using wind turbines. The move is a serious setback for the advocates of wind power, as it will be regarded as a concession that twice as many wind turbines as previously calculated will be needed to provide the same degree of reduction in Britain's carbon emissions. A wind farm industry source admitted, "It's not ideal for us. It's the result of pressure by the anti-wind farm lobby." The Telegraph also reports on this interesting development at the holiday season in the UK. Most Britons do not believe in the nativity story. Young people were particularly doubtful about the nativity, 78% of 16 to 24-year-olds saying they were not convinced of its historical reliability. Maybe because there hasn't been a video game involving the nativity. Yet, overall, 70% of Britons were skeptical of the baby's birth in a manger to a virgin mother, according to a poll of 1,000 people. Almost a quarter of those questioned who described themselves as Christians admitted they did not believe certain aspects of the Bible's teaching about Jesus. And finally, from outside the bubble, from the British newspaper The Observer, impoverished Palestinians on the Gaza Strip are being forced to scavenge for food on rubbish dumps to survive as Israel's economic blockade risks causing irreversible damage, according to the UN Relief and Works Agency, which says the economic blockade by Israel on Gaza, imposed last year, has had a, devastating, unquote, impact on the local population. Large numbers of Palestinians are unable to afford the high prices of food being smuggled through the Hamas-controlled tunnels to the Strip from Egypt, and last week were confronted with a suspension of UN food and cash distribution as a result of the siege. The figures collected by the UN agency show that 51.8%, an unprecedentedly high number of Gaza's population, are now living below the poverty line, wherever that might be. Gaza is now operating as a tunnel economy. It is hitting the most disadvantaged worse, says Chris Guinness of the UN agency. And, interestingly, Tony Blair, the Middle East envoy for the quartet of nations trying to get a Middle East settlement, former British Prime Minister, you remember him, prayer partner of George Bush, warned explicitly that Israel's policy of economic blockade, imposed a year and a half ago when Hamas took power on the Gaza Strip as a result of elections there, was reinforcing rather than undermining Hamas's hold on power. In an interview in an Israeli newspaper, Blair warned the collapse of Gaza's legitimate economy under the impact of the blockade, while harming Gaza's legitimate businessmen and ordinary people, had allowed the emergence of an alternative smuggling system, smuggling through the Hamas-controlled tunnels, allowing Hamas to tax the smuggled goods. Blair wrote to Israel's prime minister demanding that Israel permit the transfer of cash into Gaza from the West Bank to prop up the legitimate economy. The present situation is not harming Hamas, says Blair. It's harming the people. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is the Christmas edition. Sorry, the Xmas edition of Le Show.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't too far behind. Merry-go-round. Said Santa to a boy.
I'm reeling like a merry-go-round.
This week on public television, a different kind of Christmas special. No singing, no celebrities, no snow, no Santa. Spend an hour of your holiday season lighting up the tree inside as Deepak Chopra takes you on a journey to the Christmas within.
There's no room at the inn. There's no room inside.
Jesus was a dreidel spinner, and this we can't forget. Paul was Saul before he was Paul, and the Last Supper was a Seder. Jesus was a dreidel spinner, and all his disciples were too. So all you Christians, remember, your Lord was a Jew. So like the menorah, tents of a tree, give thanks to the wise man. A dreidel spinner turned water into wine. He did lots of miracles, but he never ate pork rinds. Christmas is for everyone, Hanukkah is too. Oh, you remember, your Lord was a Jew. Jesus was a dreidel spinner, and this we can't forget. Paul was Saul before he was Paul, and the Last Supper was a Seder. Jesus was a dreidel spinner, and all his disciples were too. So all you Christians, remember, your Lord was a Jew. So light the menorah, tents of a tree, give thanks to the wise man. Jesus was a dreidel spinner, turned water into wine. He did lots of miracles, but he never ate pork rinds. Christmas is for everyone, Hanukkah is too. Oh, you remember, your Lord was a Jew.
Yeah, well, nobody said the Christmas edition of Le Show is error-free, did they?
We swore in Karzai, and we swore off Rabbani. For one day, maybe it's okay to be Afghani. The stockings are hung by the chimney with care. It's the only place to hang anything there. The gift has been given, the Taliban beaten. No reindeer will visit. They know they'll be eaten. Only Wayne Newton would come this far. 'Cause it's Christmas in Kandahar. we fought side by side with Uzbeki and Turka. We've shaved off the beard and thrown off the burqa. It's still a surprise when we look in the mirror and see standing behind us Geraldo Rivera. Santa's crossed off his list the land where we dwell. We've been naughty this year, and Muslim as well. Drew Carey went by in an army car. Must be Christmas in Kandahar. We've mastered the problem of trimming the tree. We've covered it with a fine coat of explosive debris. There's no way to drive, and no way to call. There's no stuff in the stores. There aren't any stores, and there isn't a mall. There's no Cathy Lee, and no Charlie Brown. Just a couple of thousand Marines out on the town. Ramadan this year was strictly subpar. Now it's Christmas in
dressed in leather, and the angels are in chains. The sugar plums are rancid, and the stockings are in flames. There's a demon in my belly, and a gremlin in my brain. There's someone up the chimney, holding Satan is his name. And it's Christmas with the devil. Christmas with the devil. And the reindeer ran away. There'll be no Father Christmas, 'cause it's evil's holiday. So come all ye unfaithful, don't be left out in the cold. You don't need no invitation, your ticket is your soul. Know that it's a Christmas with the devil. No, 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 that it is a Christmas with the devil. And the stockings are in flames. So come on, ye unfaithful, don't be left out in the cold. You don't need no invitation, your ticket is your soul. Because it's Christmas with the devil.
Christmas with the devil.
Now, ladies and gentlemen,
he's not a general,
he commands no troops,
he's not an inspector,
he peeks at no stoops,
he's an inspector general. Oh yeah,
it's a rich week for inspector general reports. Yeah, holiday time, nobody will pay attention, don't you think? Shortly after an inspector general questioned the practice of the Pentagon issuing contracts for the purpose of administering contracts, the Army began advertising this week for an American firm to manage oversight of private security contractors in Afghanistan. It's good progress, according to the Washington Post. As it did in Iraq, the Army is increasingly turning to contractors to provide security services in Afghanistan, duties that include protecting American bases and protecting the growing number of convoys bringing in supplies from Pakistan. Well, that should be a good deal. That should be an easy one for everybody concerned. The Pentagon's Inspector General reported just last month that the Defense Department was increasingly relying on contractors to fill the gap from the reduced acquisition and oversight workforce bordering on inherently governmental functions, thereby potentially taking on decision-making roles, unquote. The Inspector General. A contract has been put out for bid in Afghanistan to be responsible for administering oversight policy and reviewing procedures in all matters concerning private security companies. The contractor would be responsible for reporting on any ongoing issues with regard to personnel and private security companies' incidents. You know what that means. Military officials, according to the bid, what the bid indicates, quote, already have someone in mind. Attention, Dick Cheney. Most critiques of the Defense Department's spending focus on big issues. Last week provided yet another example, again, according to the Washington Post. The Pentagon's Deputy Inspector General for Auditing released a 140-page independent auditor's report required by a 1990 law, yet the Inspector General said that the financial statements may be unreliable. Assistant Inspector General Patricia Marsh noted that prior audits and the agency's management itself acknowledged that amounts on the statements could not be adequately supported because of long-standing internal control weaknesses, meaning, we don't know. We just spent it. We have no paper for it. Among the material weaknesses cited, the inability of the Pentagon to account for government-owned property, plants, and equipment and materials supplied to contractors. Another weakness is that the department cannot account for money owed in its accounts receivable category because it is unable to accurately record, collect, and reconcile payments from public entities. According to the IG, the financial management of the Pentagon is so bad it prevents the department from providing the data needed to support budgeting and policy decisions. The problems also affect safeguarding of assets and proper use of funds and impair the prevention and identification of fraud, waste, and abuse. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, the Pentagon's working fine. For nearly 5 years, FBI leaders encouraged employees on temporary assignment in Iraq to bill an average of $45,000 in overtime and extra pay by routinely claiming to work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, even when some of that time was spent eating, exercising, watching movies, or attending cocktail parties. This according to the Justice Department's Inspector General. Well, cocktail parties are work by Washington standards. That's where most of the work in Washington gets done. FBI counterterrorism division managers conducted a time billing practice under which more than 1,000 employees during the height of the Iraq War earned about $71,000 during a 90-day tour, nearly triple the typical worker's salary. The practice just violated federal law and regulations and accounted for almost $8 million in the $99 million taxpayer cost of FBI efforts in Iraq. What's the FBI doing, you might ask, in Iraq? The FBI changed this overtime policy in 2008 while the Inspector General's investigation was underway. Several FBI employees claimed time spent at a weekly colleague-hosted cocktail party was work because it was a liaison effort to employees who attended from other government agencies. See? Others washed clothes during working hours. One employee defended the practice, saying, "When you're in that environment, anything you do to survive is work for the FBI. Hey, I thought it was safe. What's the deal?" FBI Assistant Director John Miller acknowledged the FBI headquarters management, quote, "allowed a flawed system to develop and remain in place too long." It's the grown-ups, ladies and gentlemen. Grown-ups have been in charge. That's why this is happening. The then assistant director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI, T.J. Harrington, said, "Isn't that a chain of bars, T.J. Harrington's?" He said the pay was justified because agents were constantly on call, had no freedom to use off time, and exercised to maintain fitness and relieve stress. Harrington said he was supposedly responsible for consulting with counterterrorism division managers regarding how the guys worked, but the inspector general found no evidence that counterterrorism managers consulted with the FBI's office, which the report called inexplicable. By the way, the report from the inspector general disclosed similar problems with FBI employees in Afghanistan. Well, why not repeat the things we've done? It's successful, you see? That's why you repeat it, because it's worked so well. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, a high-ranking Interior Department official tainted nearly every decision made on the protection of endangered species over 5 years, according to Inspector General of the Interior Department. He concludes she exerted improper political influence on many more rulings than previously thought. Julie McDonald, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary overseeing Fish and Wildlife Service, what could go wrong there? Did pervasive harm in the department's morale and integrity, to the department's morale and integrity, and may have risked the well-being of species with her agenda, says Inspector General Earl Devaney. You know, species are overrated, ladies and gentlemen. There's only one that really... The Interior Department last year reversed 7 rulings that denied endangered species increased protection after an investigation found that McDonald had applied political pressure in these cases. The new report looked at nearly 24 other cases involving endangered species not examined earlier. It found McDonald directly interfered with at least 13 decisions and indirectly 2 more. But, you know, she's highly qualified for this work. She's a civil engineer with no formal training in natural sciences, because that's the way the grown-ups do it. She resigned in May of last year. Department employees reported they used her name as a verb. Encountering political interference from senior managers was called getting McDonald'd. The inspector general said McDonald's zeal to advance her agenda has caused considerable harm to the integrity of the U.S. of the endangered species program and to the morale and reputation of the Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as potential harm to animals under the Endangered Species Act. Quote, her heavy-handedness, this is from the Inspector General of the Interior Department, her heavy-handedness has cast doubt on nearly every endangered species decision issued during her tenure from 2002 to 2007. She did not return telephone messages. But in a letter to the Inspector General refusing to be interviewed, she said he showed breathtaking arrogance. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Real Santa Cinder, but he won't have his reindeer.
Santa done moved from the North Pole. Santa done moved from the North Pole. People down there don't rock and roll.
Santa's gonna fly this trip, and he'll be coming in a rocket. But he don't carry it on his back. He's got a great big rover to carry around and leave a lot of gifts all over town.
Santa done moved from the North Pole. Santa done moved from the North Pole. People down there don't rock and roll.
Santa's gonna fly this trip and he'd be coming in a rocket ship.
That is a young-sounding Santa. Ladies and gentlemen, this is New Orleans, Louisiana, and people ask me all the time when I'm traveling around the country or when I'm staying at home, what's it like in New Orleans right now, aside from being warmish at Christmas time? Well, you know, we have this mayor. New Orleans has this mayor, Ray Nagin. And when you have a politician named Ray Nagin, you know what he's going to be doing with his promises. But he's best known in New Orleans for the fact that he's, shall we say, not ubiquitous and omnipresent in the city, if you see what I mean. He's well known for soft peddling his presence in the city by basically not being here a lot. There are reports that he basically moved his family to Texas after Katrina and has continue to domicile them there. He denies that, but it's still something that dogs him, that reputation. And he appointed a so-called recovery czar about 2 years ago named Ed Blakely, who famously in New Orleans predicted in January of 2007 that, quote, there'll be cranes on the skyline, unquote, by September. Of course, if there are, they were only accompanying herons and pelicans. So this year, because he's taken all this criticism, I thought it was only fair to dedicate a Christmas song to the mayor of New Orleans.
I ran hard to be the head of this town. Now some think it's strange that I'm never around. But Houston is nice, and it's not all that far, and it's Christmas wherever you are. New Orleans is great every once in a while to come in for an interview, a wave and a smile. But if I had to stay here, I'd live in a bar, and it's Christmas wherever you are. Holiday time brings the warmth and the cheer, a time without want and a time without fear, a time when I don't really need to be here. My business pals know my email and phone, so I never have to feel all alone. The city it pays for my planes and my car, and it's Christmas wherever you are. Holiday time brings the warmth and the cheer, a time without want and a time without fear. One more time when I don't really need to be here. One of these days I'll move back to stay. There'll be cranes on the skyline, as Ed Blakely would say. Till then I'm content to be a bright distant star, and it's Christmas wherever you are. Yes, it's Christmas wherever you are. Well, you know, man, it's hard.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apology almost of the week.
We're almost sorry.
From the president of Barclays Bank in England.
For the banking industry, you have to have an industry, a banking industry, in which consumers have trust, and in some cases that trust has broken down. Now, if I ask myself, do I feel that the industry should be self-confident about recreating that trust through time, I do feel that, but it starts by saying sorry. It starts by admitting that things went wrong. Not everywhere. I mean, there are plenty of banks in the world in whom, and I hope Barclays is one of them, in whom customers have trust. But if you look at the industry as a whole, if I speak as a member of the industry rather than as chief executive of Barclays, I absolutely have to say we should share our portion of responsibility. We have to recreate trust.
Sorry. Almost. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM. Thanks to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. And thank you for listening all year long. I'll be back next year with part two of the Year in Rebuke. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. From New Orleans, so long and stay warm.